Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday. Happy New Year's. It's the 3rd of January, and it's All Things Political. Our first All Things Political. It will be interesting to see what we'll be talking about Monday to Monday to Monday as this year progresses. Earl Ingram is our guest this hour. Earl is a radio host for a program on WMCS 1290 here in Milwaukee, Evening Rush with Earl Ingram. And he has had a long career. He's been doing radio for some time now, but he's a lifelong resident of Milwaukee, a graduate of Washington High School here in the city, and the majority of his professional career was spent working 33 years at A.O. Smith Tower Automotive. He also worked for the City of Milwaukee Housing Authority as an assistant education specialist in the Park Lawn Development. He does a great deal of community work here. He serves as a mentor and volunteer at his alma mater, Washington High School. Every February, he works with the high school staff to provide funding for a citywide special needs prom. Hundreds of disabled children dressed in their finest, dancing and communicating with each other. He has been president of the Neighborhood Children's Sports League for the past 11 years, and the list goes on. We have much to talk about today. The new governor, Scott Walker, will be inaugurated, and the festivities will be carried here on Wisconsin Public Radio at noon today and are expected to run until about 1:30. And we'll be talking about, I think we'll start the hour with how the new governor can create 250,000 jobs and the kinds of jobs that are needed, particularly in Central City, Milwaukee. And we'll look at whether or not there will be a health care repeal. We will talk about the Tea Party. We'll talk about the new Congress in Washington and much more with Earl. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. You can also send a message on email if you'd like to do that. talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Tomorrow at 9 o'clock, we'll be having a Republican perspective on the new governor and also the national picture, the Congress. And the second hour of today's program, we'll be talking about the huge economic woes that we face and the number of people who are unemployed in this country. We'll have a professor from Rutgers University, and this professor says that they've been doing this survey of people who have lost their jobs during the Great Recession, and the economic prospects for ordinary Americans is one filled with gloom, he says. So whoever is in office, challenging times are ahead. Earl Ingram, thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning, and thank you very much for considering me. I am more than honored to have an opportunity to finally get to speak with you. I have watched you and admired you from afar for quite a while. I have always looked at you as a person who is unapologetic for your views on what is right, what is just, and what is moral, and also for the fact that you were able to trade barbs with none other than Kevin Fisher for all those years. You must really miss that.
Thank you, Earl. I had no idea you knew who I was, but I appreciate the comments, and you made my new year. I'm off to a good start. Well, I admire you as well. I listen to your program whenever I can, and I love the variety of guests and issues that you tackle, and it's very good. It's very good radio. So thanks to you. All right.
Well thank you.
Yeah. Let's start with jobs, Earl. 250,000 jobs in the state of Wisconsin. The new governor says that he would like to create. From your perspective, doing a show that emanates from Milwaukee and parts of Milwaukee that are hard hit, how do you recommend he goes about doing that?
Well, number one, when I hear people talking about in glowing terms, he's going to create 250,000 jobs. I think about 250,000 jobs statewide. And I think, you know, if you look at how many different towns and cities are in the state of Wisconsin, you're talking about a drop in the bucket. You know, when I was a young man, obviously, all the companies and that existed here, major corporations in this city, 250,000 jobs. Just about everybody I knew had a job that was certainly paying more than the livable wage, a middle-class lifestyle wage. And so when I hear people talk about 250,000 jobs, well, they forget how many millions of jobs have been lost. And so even if he was able to create this fictitious 250,000 jobs, many of them at a minimum wage, $7 an hour, what benefit or what good is it going to be with people who are struggling? In our particular city, Milwaukee is number four in poverty. Out of 30,000 cities in this country, we rank number four. Certainly, there's nothing to celebrate on the creation of 250,000 jobs in this city.
What about national?
If it was solely in this city, yes. But in the state, it makes it clear that there's only going to be a handful here.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about a government response to all of this and take a national picture as well, Earl. Are you critical of the president for not really getting the government involved more during his first 2 years in job creation?
Anybody who's listened to me knows I call it straight, whether it's Democrat, Republican, conservative, really does not matter. The truth of the matter is our president spent more time focusing on health care and other issues than he did addressing the economy. Now, he didn't create the conditions of the economy, but he certainly didn't realize how bad, or he didn't pay close enough attention to that, because he had a plan when he came in to get health care through. Now, I'm not saying that health care was not important, but, it's something that probably didn't have to be the number one issue, especially when you had an economy that was falling apart even prior to him coming into office. And even during the time that he was in office, we were hemorrhaging 600,000 jobs per month prior to and even during the time that President Obama was in office. So certainly he has some culpability in what has happened with jobs. But the biggest culprit, without a doubt, has been the policies of George Bush and Republicans who had control over things for six out of the last 10 years.
As you well know, there are a lot of economists and others who study government who are saying we don't exactly know what's going on with the economy. We've lost those manufacturing jobs that you just talked about that were so vital to family-supporting jobs here in the city of Milwaukee. And what's to replace all of that? What is it, a green economy? What is it? What about the jobs that are being shipped overseas? Something fundamentally different is happening to our economy, and we don't know how to make it better.
I maintain, and this goes back to, again, for those who don't know, I spent 33 years in a corporation called A.O. Smith, which produced automobile frames and truck frames for for all over the world. So every truck and car manufactured, basically, we produced the frames. Well, at that point in time, going back to, and this was the early mid-1980s, we started seeing jobs outsourced at that point in time. And so many jobs in this country have been outsourced, especially industry, and people didn't make a whimper. They hardly opened their mouths. I mean, where I worked, there were 6,500 people. But there was no hue and cry when those jobs left. And so when you look at this is the results of NAFTA, GATT, and policies of one world government that has taken and outsourced our jobs. It is, in fact, part and parcel to congressmen and senators, both Democrat and Republicans, who agreed that and made it possible for these corporations and gave them incentives for them to move the jobs overseas. Now, the real problem is that many people in America are uninformed, and so they don't realize, as they look around and wonder what happened to the jobs, they don't realize the jobs have been gone, and they're not coming back. So there's nothing, anybody can do at this point under the auspices of a global economy that is going to do much in the way of bringing back industry. One thing for sure, Germany, when I was a young man, was our competitor, our major competitor in industry. Germany never got rid of her industry. America has, and this is the results of it. The jobs that made America what she really is are now gone, and now we look to scramble to create anything. If you find somebody who's making $10 an hour now, people will refer to that as a good job.
Right.
Well, that's not a good job in today's. You still have to live in America. If certainly $10 an hour is great in India, it's great in China, but in America, you are working poor.
So what advice do you have for the new governor today, because today is the day that he'll be inaugurated? What advice do you have for either creating a new kind of work for people who live in Milwaukee and in Wisconsin? Is it green energy, or is it just kind of a dismal future here?
Well, it's pretty obvious it's a dismal future. And I say all constantly on my program, and we have to start with the truth. We're not going to compromise the truth. We're not going to sugarcoat it. And the truth be told, we are in a climate, in a city, in a condition nationally, locally, that I have never seen in my 56 years of living. And that is that there are not and will not be enough well-paying jobs to continue to maintain middle-class America. What is going on in the city of Milwaukee is a microcosm of what is going on in central cities across this nation, where industry, which gave people opportunities to lift themselves out of poverty, are gone and won't come back. Now, Scott Walker, I mentioned to you earlier, I was up early this morning, and I was going to go up to Madison with a contingent of 8 buses with organizations, religious and others, across the city, who realize what Scott Walker has done, what he is going to do with killing the train Targo here in this city, in the old building where I worked for 33 years. And we know what's in his mind. What is in Scott Walker's mind is what is in the minds of other governors like Chris Christie and others who believe that government should be downsized, and so programs that have been there to make it possible for those who struggle are now going to be cut. It is a very, very dangerous time in this country, because it's about survival of the fittest. America has never been about survival of the fittest, but with this mindset of people such as Scott Walker and Governor Christie and others who somehow believe that the average person, there's no room for him or her anymore. And this doesn't matter what color you are anymore. And that's the biggest thing that I see that we are going to have to come to grips with, is like that group of people who went up to Madison today, people of all walks of life, all religious backgrounds, all sectors, united for one common goal, and that's to try to make America realize she has a moral responsibility to live up to the ideals of what this country says it is. You can say one thing, but your actions speak louder than those words.
Nonetheless, both houses of the legislature in Wisconsin and the governor all switched to Republican. And as you know, the president said that he took a shellacking. How do you explain that?
Well, I explain it this way. There are people who really fail to understand what is really going on. They somehow seem to think that the conservative movement, this whole conservative movement, includes middle-class people. It really does not. And they have been masterful in leading the average person to believe that they are speaking for them. Big government needs to be eliminated. Taxes need to be cut. Well, the average citizen is too busy in America. We're fortunate that we have been able to live a lifestyle of leisure and of sport and play. And so we have not had to really focus on what really goes on, because America has been number one for so long in everything. Well, now America is presented with a condition that it has never seen. And so those middle-class people who have voted and who have somehow have selective amnesia and forgotten that 6 years ago the Republicans controlled everything. Before George Bush got into office, there was major surpluses that Bill Clinton had fostered. and that we were financially on solid ground. But it was the Republican base and party that came in under the same the guise of promising that they are going to be fiscally responsible, and did the exact opposite. So it is amazing to me that these Republicans were able to con people, if you will, into believing that they are going to come back and this is a new version of the Republicans, not the one that 6 years ago mortgaged us and our children. The very people who are blaming President Obama for mortgaging the future of our children and grandchildren fail to realize who really started this process in motion.
We have many people who would like to speak with you, Earl, and we'll take phone calls momentarily. Our guest for All Things Political this hour is radio host of The Evening Rush with Earl Ingram. It's on 1290 WMCS, based here in Milwaukee, and Earl is our guest this hour. He has, as you heard him say, a long history of working in the city back when there were family-supporting jobs from industries that were here. He is a graduate of Washington High School and spent 33 years at A.O. Smith Tower Automotive. Also worked for the City of Milwaukee Housing Authority as an assistant education specialist in the Park Lawn Development. He now hosts this radio talk show from 3 to 6 in the afternoon. And we are talking about all things political. Of course, here in Wisconsin, a new governor is going to be inaugurated today. That will be carried on Wisconsin Public Radio beginning at noon, and a new Congress as well. And so we're looking at this year and what those changes will mean for people in our state and for the country. Here's the phone number. Lines are busy right now, but keep trying. You'll get through eventually. 800-486-8655. And for a message, go to talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number two of our program this Monday, unemployment. A new report about workers who lost their jobs during the Great Recession is not a good one. More than 15 million Americans, that's a lot of people, are officially classified as jobless. And what that means for this country, what it means for their lives, we'll have the co-author of this report. It was done by Rutgers University, the Center for Workforce Development, and the professor of public policy and director of that center, Carl Van Horn, will be joining us after 10 o'clock today. Earl Ingram, radio host, The Evening Rush on 1290 WMCS here in Milwaukee, is our guest this hour. And we go to phone calls, starting with Carl from Houston, Minnesota. Hi, Carl.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question for Earl, it's kind of a comment, and I'd just like to see what he thinks of my idea. It's rather simplistic, but it's got to do with the budget problem. I'm not sure of the exact numbers, but if I'm just throwing out numbers that I think are close, if our budget deficit is $3 billion and our total budget is $30 billion, that's approximately 10% of the budget. So why don't we just cut 10% all the way across the board, and it's problem solved? And one other comment I had was an easy fix as far as the companies that, you know, our economy and the jobs, you know, just reward the behavior you want. You've got companies taking countries out of the jobs out of the country. Well, punish that. And those that keep jobs in the country, reward them for that action. It's just a matter of supply and demand. It's like the banks don't make the loans and there's no money, there's no jobs. But I'll take my, answer or your
off
comments
here. On my thank you, Carl.
Off
thank
here.
You, Carl. Earl.
Well, thank you very much for the call, Carl. But a couple things. I would say this, number one, I don't know what budget you are talking about. You're from Minnesota. Are you talking about the state budget? Or
he's talking about the national budget.
Well, the national budget. Well, here's what goes on with the national budget is people talk about cutting spending, because that is the hue and cry that we're hearing from all conservatives, cut the budgets. Well, where are you going to cut it? Number one, 85% of all entitlement programs for the budget are Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And so that leaves 15% of the overall spending for the budget in under the guise of entitlements, as you know, we're talking about unemployment. We're talking about education. We're talking about Head Start. We're talking about food stamps. We're talking about safety nets. And what do the Republicans do as they come into office? The first thing they say is we're going to cut $100 billion out of the 15% that is left of government spending. And to me, that is cruel and inhumane, because in this climate where there are very few jobs and one of the worst economic conditions in the history of this nation, to respond to that by cutting the very sustenance that people need to survive until things get better points to people who have either lost, who have no compassion at all for others, or people who believe in the survival of the fittest. And that's exactly what is going on when you talk about cutting dollars away from the budget. And now, as far as, you know, the corporations that move, they're moving with the blessings and have moved with the blessings of the federal government. These corporations didn't just decide to willy-nilly get up and move. Many of those corporations that left, major corporations, were given incentives by Democrats and Republicans in the state Senate. I mean, in the Senate, and also in the House of Representatives over the last 20 years to take those jobs out of this country. So it didn't happen, by osmosis or by accident. It was a master plan that has been put in place, and so all Democrats and Republicans are not truthful if they won't tell the truth about how those jobs left this country.
Let's go to Jim from Milwaukee, Earl. Hi, Jim.
Yes, hi. It's New Year, so it's time for some predictions. So I'd like to make a tongue-in-cheek prediction of a new happy children's book that's going to come out for young Republican children, which will be told gleefully to them. It's called Rudolph the Scab-Nosed Reindeer. Once upon a time, during the sad times, when the light was dim and people were mean-spirited, incoming Governor Scott Walker invoked the Santa Clause, to give them sheer clause in the reindeer's union contract, and used it to break the union and reduce pay and benefits and pensions. And he put the reindeer on furlough for the holiday season. And one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say, "Rudolph, with your nose so bright, only you will haul my sleigh tonight." None of the reindeer loved him, and none of them shouted out with glee, "Rudolph, a scab-nosed reindeer and corporate misery, hee-hee."
Earl.
I guess I would respond to that this way. I am a union man. I was for 33 years and will always be that, and I know the importance of unions. But in today's climate, I have to tell you that if you look at where things are, there are less and less people working who are able to pay the taxes to support those who are in positions of government and the public sector. Now, I don't know what's going to happen. I do know that the insurance, the cost for insurance has just escalated to the degree that many of us can't afford it, period, especially those of us in the private sector, and those in the public sector are just going to have to realize that this is not the 1970s anymore, and that they're going to have to pay a higher percentage of their insurance because there aren't enough people working anymore who are going to be able to support that. That doesn't mean that I'm anti-union. What that means is I'm realist. I'm a realist who understands that the numbers are not what they were 40 years ago. And so the corporations have left this state. So somebody, somewhere along the line, is going to have to do something to support the cost of pensions and insurance. And the average private sector person will not be able to do it anymore because we either don't make enough money or there aren't enough of us working.
Let's talk about health care for a moment more here. And the president has always said that it was tied very much to the economy, and that's why he had to go that direction. When we talk about public employees paying more, union people for their health care, which is happening with teachers and which will no doubt happen with public employees here in the state of Wisconsin fairly soon. Do we need to, do you think, revamp the health care policy? Did it go far enough in order to take on the high cost of health care in this country? Will there be people revisiting a public option? Should there be, Earl?
You know, there should have been a public option. And I can tell you, when I was a young man, I had, we had the best insurance money could buy where I worked for 33 years. And, of course, as fate would have it, I was a young person and never got ill. But as I've gotten older, I started realizing that how critically important it is that people have health care. As a matter of fact, last year I had three major surgeries.
Oh, my.
And those major surgeries cost, they were astronomical, the cost associated with them. Now, I certainly wish I would have had the insurance coverage that I had when I was a young man, and there weren't a whole lot of co-pays to go along with it. But even after the insurance company paid their share, it certainly left me in a tough way with having to pay my co-pays and everything else that went along with those surgeries. People need to get into this mindset, and I know it's hard in America, but health care should be a human right. It is should not be a privilege. And only in America, supposedly the greatest nation on the face of the earth, is health care, you know, not a privilege and not a human right. Why should someone, because they don't have money, be denied access to life-saving medical treatment and preventative medical treatment? Had I not had insurance, I can tell you I wouldn't be here today, because they certainly wouldn't have ran the expensive tests necessary to determine what my maladies were.
Mm-hmm.
And so you find people who are arrogant with, well, those people don't have insurance, throwing around as if they somehow have the right, or that they are superior to more superior to someone else because they have insurance. Well, I've always taken this philosophy. You know, we didn't create life, we didn't give it, and so we shouldn't have a role, play a major role, and dollars shouldn't play a major role in whether or not somebody has a right to continue living or not. I know that's not a popular response, but that's a humanistic response. And until we start looking at it as health care, and President Obama, to his credit, attempted to have the public option and was forced under the guise of making sure he gets something passed to pass it up, well, it certainly should be brought back up.
So you had a rough year last year.
Oh yeah, but I'm here. I'm here. I'm blessed.
Oh, you sounded good. Yeah, you're here. It's going to be a good year.
Yes,
you're going to be healthy this year.
Well, every year is a good year. Every day is a good day when you reach a certain age. Every day.
I know what you're saying. What about health care reform? Do you think there's going to be a repeal of parts of the health care reform?
Well, you know, there's all this false bravado by the Tea Partiers and, you know, many conservative talk show hosts who have led people down a pristine path as if they're going to be able to somehow undo the health care reform. If people really knew, and if they use common sense, the Republicans control the House. The Democrats still control the Senate and the presidency. So, therefore, two branches of government are still controlled by the Democrats. So it is impossible for, you know, the health care plan to be turned around. And people won't be honest. Those who run for office and, you know, and have gotten elected under the promise and the guise that they're going to repeal health care. Well, you can say whatever it is you want to say. Facts are a whole lot different. There's no way possible that they're going to be able to repeal health care. Health care is here to stay. There'll be some adjustments on it, but you're certainly not going to turn it back, no way.
Jim, thanks for your call. Steve in Milwaukee is next. Hi, Steve.
How you doing?
All right, how are you?
Oh, I don't know where to start with all this. I have to say that I certainly agree with the sentiments that have been expressed by your guest, and I also worked at A.O. Smith back in the 70s and made good money. But what I see the problem is, we keep focusing on politics. Politics is not the answer here. I don't care if it's Democrats or if it's Republicans. They're all the same.
That's cool.
Going to the voting booth doesn't do a darn bit of difference. It has to be, we have to regain some unions and some social organizations that counteract this corporate domination of our culture. I mean, I made almost 7 hours an hour in 73 and had benefits. Well, that they weren't being benevolent. They were just sharing their profits. Walmart is a huge employer. Are they sharing their profits? No. No one makes them. I mean, it's not just about manufacturing. We still have lots of jobs here. They just aren't being paid because there's no unions to say you must pay them.
Are you working now, Steve?
No, I've been unemployed for almost 2 years. I'm 7 years old with a master's degree and 27 years of management.
You know what, Steve? You are absolutely correct. I've said it from the beginning. You know, Democrat, conservative, Republican is like voting for Lucifer, Satan, and the devil. You're going to catch hell with all three.
Woo!
It's not political. People somehow seem to think that some benevolent politician who comes and tells you that we are going to, if you vote for me, I'm going to change this. Well, no, you're not going to change anything, because once you go either to City Hall or down or to the county or to Madison or to Washington, D.C., you forget about the people who elected you and put you in office, because the whole system that has this nasty word called lobbyists that many American people don't even know exist and don't even understand what a lobbyist's responsibility and job and duty is, and also don't realize that this lobbyist then comes in with capital and takes control over your representative. And so America, even though it's a great nation and even though politically the system is better than most, it is corrupt when it comes to those who can come in with money and buy the votes of our elected officials. So as long as that's possible, we will continue to face what it is we're facing now.
And it's been going on for so long, Earl, and we've been talking about money and politics and for years and years and years. Everybody realizes that's what's going on, and it never changes.
Well, you know why it never changes? Because people just accept it. And so when you start talking about the corruptness in that, the first thing people will tell you, and this is where American people, I think for the most part, are missing the point. Vote, vote. We need to vote. Vote, 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 vote. Well, yes, you know, people, I vote in every election. Certainly we should vote. But if you're going to vote and then not follow up on the people who you have put in office to make sure that they do their due diligence and do what they told you they were going to do, then there's somebody, wherever it is they're going to be governing, and they're going to make sure that they do what it is they want them to do. And so the American people, we do the right thing, we go and vote, but then we don't hold them accountable once they get into the positions that they're in.
Thanks, Steve, for your call. Our number is 800, and good luck in finding work. That's got to be hard. 800-486-8655. Is our number. Earl Ingram is our guest this hour. He's the host of The Evening Rush on 1290 WMCS, based here in Milwaukee. And we are going to talk more about, I want to tell this to Steve and other listeners, the second hour of our program today. Two professors at Rutgers have been following a number of people who have been unemployed for a long period of time. Not that Steve will get much encouragement about this, but maybe there is some kind of policy that can be formulated to help people who are unemployed. This is 15 months of surveys of workers who are unemployed. One quarter of those workers have found full-time jobs, but nearly all of them for less pay and with fewer or no benefits. I should say only one quarter have found full-time jobs. For those who remain unemployed, the cupboard has long been bare. We'll be speaking with one of the authors of the report, a professor at the Center for Workforce Development at Rutgers University. Earl Ingram, our guest now. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. This is Inauguration Day, and we will be covering the inaugural festivities, and that will begin at noon today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as Scott Walker becomes the new governor of the state of Wisconsin. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Earl Ingram, our guest, and let's go to more phone calls. Jack is next from Eagle River. Hi, Jack.
Yes, hi to you, too. I just wanted to point out about 20 years ago, I moved here from California, and I was very proud to move to a progressive state like Wisconsin with the tradition, you know, of La Follette and Nelson and right up to Feingold. And, you know, I was telling folks back in California, look, we've got two senators, Democratic, progressive, and we have, that time it was the governor was Thompson. And I thought even he was less conservative than Walker, I'm sure. But what I'm thinking about is the Tea Party up here is pretty strong, pretty active, and they were supporting Walker, you know, just as though it was like that Engel, and you know, a real, that was their candidate up here. And, you know, and I'm thinking the Tea Party was conceived and financed by a right-wing people who mostly, I'm trying to think of the word, well, anyway, it was, they don't want any regulation. They don't like big government, and basically what they're saying is they don't want government to regulate business, and they want business to run the country, and that's where we're heading. The corporations are going to run the country, and unless the people wake up and try to put a break to it. So I'm rambling here. I'm sorry, I was distracted, but
no, you're not rambling, Jack. I think you made your point, Earl.
Well, you know, he is absolutely correct that this is about corporations and businesses, and corporations, for the most part, the one thing that Scott Walker is going to do, and what really is the problem with America, is not so much capitalism, but unbridled capitalism. And so under the guise of unbridled capitalism, corporations have been allowed to do whatever it is they want to do. What good is it that corporations wax rich and wealthy, but yet the treasures and the wealth of the masses of the people in this nation continue to plummet? So what good is it that a major corporation can take jobs overseas, jobs that were livable wage jobs, and jobs like I had, where you could you know, make enough money to live a middle-class lifestyle, send your children on to universities, and live the American dream, and you take that same job over, you know, to Iraq and pay people little or nothing. You know, you spoke a little earlier, Kathleen, about, you know, these the jobs and those sorts of things and jobs in this country. If people really, if the American people really thought, here's what is going on. You are now using our tax dollars to create jobs in Afghanistan and Iraq in order to, you know, uplift the economies of those nations. Well, how could you in good conscience use tax dollars to create jobs in Afghanistan and Iraq before you create them in your own nation? Something is wrong. Something is morally, spiritually wrong with this nation and the American people who aren't even aware of what is going on.
What do you think we ought to be doing in Afghanistan, Earl?
Well, I know why we're there, and most Americans don't. We believe that we're chasing bin Laden, or we're chasing
right,
the Taliban out. Well, there's only a handful. It's been proven by the CIA. There's a handful of Taliban fighters in Afghanistan, no more than 25. So explain to me why we are spending the treasury of this nation in a time where we're getting ready to cut social programs from the least of these, and yet we are throwing away billions of dollars halfway across the world. Well, the truth of the matter is we are there for the natural resources. that are there. And what really bothers me the most is that we aren't being told the truth for why we are doing the things that we are doing. And sometimes you need to go outside of the print media and the television media, and you need to read and find out for yourself. The Internet is a glorious invention that will give you an opportunity to travel outside of what people tell you, and you can find the truth yourself. And then once people find out the truth, once you find out why we are in Afghanistan, and this is one of the bones that I have to pick with President Obama, it's his war now. He did not have to escalate the war in Afghanistan. While you can give him credit on the one hand for coming out of Iraq, to escalate it in Afghanistan makes him no better than all of those presidents before them who have done what we do, and that's go into other nations and invade the natural resources of those countries.
Earl, where do you find the truth?
You can find the truth anywhere if you're willing to seek it. Now, again, unlike the times when you and I were young, when the Internet did not exist and you couldn't travel, you know, as readily across the world as you can now, you and I had to go to the library.
And we had, it was all right.
And there were books in a small section of the library for people who wanted to think outside of the box. Well, you don't have that problem today. There's information, you know, it's an information highway. And so any information you need to know about what is going on with your government, and it's available. Well, there's a reason why there's so much outrage about WikiLeaks. It is because information that has been kept away from the masses of the people, some of it justifiably so, but other parts of it is critically essential to the very survival of our nation, that we know information that our government is doing. If I'm going to send my sons and daughters off to war to fight, and you tell me, and lose their lives, and you tell me that they are going there to fight for democracy, I want to know for sure if that's the reason that my sons and daughters will be fighting and risking their lives. But if I later find out it is because of greed in multinational corporations, well, now that's a different story.
Yeah. Jack, thanks for the call. Cornelia in Wauwatosa, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. This is not a happy day for me. I don't see that Scott Walker is going to do much good for our state. And I only have the satisfaction of having done everything I possibly can not to see this day, but here it is. I agree with Mr. Ingram really on just about everything. And my question is, he said that we have a human and moral obligation to all people as far as health care and other human rights are concerned, and I agree with that. However, what concerns me the most is that, we're still asking unbridled capitalism for moral values. And I think that has just been a big mistake from the very beginning and for a long time. Do you think that in the long run, the hopelessness and frustration of the people who are deprived of their basic human rights, which to me include health care and care for the elder and jobs and so forth, might decide to cause civic unrest? And do you think that at some point we might get back to a serious anti-war movement?
Thank you very much for the question. You are right on point. Throughout history, conditions create leadership. And right now, inside of America, America's not going to be conquered outside of the borders of America. America's biggest worry and threat is not some Al-Qaeda person. It is, in fact, what is happening inside of the bowels of this nation, what is developing as we speak, and that is injustice. Injustice to the American citizens, the American people who have done the right thing, who have gone on to universities, those who have worked, trusted and believed in their country, believed in the leadership, and now find themselves at the lowest ebb that they've ever been in their lives. Many people, who live in, when I started realizing how many homes were in foreclosure in Waukesha and Oconomowoc, I was astounded. And, you know, because those are areas that had never been hit before in recession. So, and if they were, they were very, very few and far between. But the housing crisis, which is, you know, they call it a housing crisis, but those in the know it was manufactured and created and developed to take the wealth that some of is the only wealth that any of us have had. It's always been in this country that your home was Americana. It made you an American to own your home. It gave you a piece of the pie. And then for somebody to mastermind a plot and manipulate a plot to take the very wealth and the homes away from the American citizens is absolutely tragic. And yes, at some, just like the civil rights struggle and any struggle throughout history, when injustice is so great that it chases justice out, then people will respond. And what has to happen is this: it can no longer be about they're black, I'm white, I live here, I live there. No, we are all Americans, and we all realize that the American dream for our children, for our grandchildren, is at stake and very, very well could be over. And so once you realize that, then we realize we have a major fight in common. And as the Tea Partiers say, we want to reclaim our government. No, it's not just the Tea Partiers. We all need to reclaim our government.
Thanks, Cornelia. Let's go to Mike in Oshkosh. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, good morning, and Happy New Year, Kathleen.
Happy New Year, Mike.
I don't know if the guests would agree with me, but I think strategically progressives would be very wise in calling conservatives bluff on the budget. And the guest touched on something important earlier when he mentioned the composition of the federal budget, which is essentially entitlements, and if you add interest on it, interest on the debt, by 2020, there's only four programs that will compose the entire federal budget. That's Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, interest on the debt. If you want to address the debt in the future, and we'll collapse if we don't, you have to take on medical costs. And mathematically, the only way to do that, since we have medical care that costs twice as much as the rest of the world, and we cover less people, the only way to go forward and balance the budget is to have a single-payer system. It's the only way to do it mathematically. So if progressives would call Republicans bluff and say, yeah, let's balance the budget, there's only one mathematical possibility to do it, and that's to have a single payer. I don't understand why they don't do it.
Earl.
I'm in agreement with you, but it's pretty obvious that there are people who have capitalistic views on why they won't ever do that. It is about money, like everything else is about in this country. And as long as a dollar bill has more value than human beings, we will forever be looking at what we are looking at now, what people will measure, whether or not somebody's life has value enough. It's not going to be based on anything other than who has the money.
And
thank you for the call.
Thanks very much. Here's another email. We didn't get to many of them about money. Tom in Wausau writes, there won't be any change in political direction until corporate and special interest money is eliminated from politics. Our Supreme Court has made it necessary that change in campaign financing will require a constitutional amendment.
Well, he's right. But here's the real issue with that. The Supreme, who's on the Supreme Court is dictated by money. You know, who are the people are who are going to make those final decisions? That's all dictated by money. So that won't be the panacea either.
We have time for maybe one more phone call for you, Earl. Mike in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Well, if only 30% of the people voted and they happen to be high-end economically, other than the people on the other end that talk, you talk about all these people with entitlements, apparently don't care, and they got what they deserved, actually. If they would have all got out there and voted, there would have been a different thing. So you can't preach to the choir, which you're doing on public radio, and expect that anything's going to happen if nobody's going to go out there and vote for it.
Well, here's the problem with that train of thought, and many people who think like you, seem to think that because people didn't go out and vote, well, there are many people who don't vote because they feel that there's nothing to vote for. They don't realize, they haven't ever seen voting somebody in change their reality. And let's be honest. You know, I live in America. I love America. I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. It is the greatest nation on the face of the earth. And certainly, if it lived up to its constitution, it could certainly be the greatest nation in the history of mankind, if we lived up to the principles and ideals that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights suggest. But the problem is we've never been able to live up to that. And so people who suffer, and never forget, this nation supposedly was founded under the Judeo-Christian ethic. We hear that all the time. What does that mean? Either there's a religious reality in this nation or there's not. And either we worship and honor one God or we worship and honor the other God, and that's money.
Thank you, Earl, so much for being with us. You're a great guest. Earl Ingram, our guest this hour, you can hear him on WMCS 1290, where he's host of the Evening Rush from 3 until 6. Obviously, there are many people who have confidence in Republican leadership, and we will be speaking with someone tomorrow at 9 about that. Thanks for listening.